In 1962, Victor and Mildred Gertzel published a revealing study of 413 what they called famous and exceptionally gifted people. The study was called Cradles of Eminence. They spent years attempting to understand what produced such greatness in these people, what common thread might run through all of these outstanding people's lives. Surprisingly, the most outstanding fact was that virtually all of them, 392 out of 413, had to overcome very difficult obstacles in order to become who they were. Philosopher and author Machana Dlewayo, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, said, "Your greatest obstacles are your greatest opportunities." Public speaker and author Tucker Max said, "Obstacles are only obstacles if you see them as obstacles. They can also be called opportunities." Clergyman and author Norman Vincent Peale wrote, "When obstacles or difficulties arise, the positive thinker takes them as creative opportunities." And author and speaker Darlene Quinn wrote, "Others see obstacles, I see opportunities." You kind of get the sense of a theme going there. In the book of Numbers, the Israelites sent 12 spies into the promised land who eventually came back and reported that it looked like a great place to live. But 10 of the men focused on the fact that the land had incredible walled cities and that it was inhabited by giants which they would have to face and defeat. Two of the spies, however, named Joshua and Caleb, insisted that the promised land was an opportunity, that with God's help they could conquer. But as we just noted, the other 10 spies saw it as an obstacle, much too formidable to overcome. Motivational speaker and self-help author Wayne Dyer has said, "If you believe it will work out, you will see opportunities. If you believe it won't, you will see obstacles." I invite you to turn to Numbers chapter 13. We're going to read sort of all that chapter. We're going to leave out a few verses because they're just names and connections. Numbers chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. "The Lord now said to Moses, 'Send out men to explore the land of Canaan, the land I am giving to the Israelites. Send one leader from each of the 12 ancestral tribes.' So Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He sent out 12 men, all tribal leaders of Israel, from their camp in the wilderness of Paran. These were the tribes and the names of their leaders." And the next 12 verses list the names of the men. And then we pick up in verse 17. "Moses gave the men these instructions as he sent them out to explore the land. 'Go north through the Negev into the hill country, see what the land is like, and find out whether the people living there are strong or weak, few or many. See what kind of land they live in. Is it good or bad? Do their towns have walls, or are they unprotected like open camps? Is the soil fertile or poor? Are there many trees? Do your best to bring back samples of the crops you see. It happened to be the season for harvesting the first ripe grapes.' So they went up and explored the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near Lebo Hamath. Going north, they passed through the Negev and arrived at Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, all descendants of Anak, lived. The ancient town of Hebron was founded 7 years before the Egyptian city of Zoan. When they came to the valley of Eshcol, they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, so large that it took two of them to carry it back on a pole between them. They also brought back samples of the pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol, which means cluster, because of the cluster of grapes the Israelite men cut there. The spies came back with a good report of all that was in the land. And then in Numbers chapter 13, verses 25 through 27, we read, "After exploring the land for 40 days, the men returned to Moses, Aaron, and the whole community of Israel at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. They reported to the whole community what they had seen and showed them the fruit they had taken from the land. This was their report to Moses. We entered the land you sent us to explore, and it is indeed a bountiful country, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here's the kind of fruit it produces. Then, depending on your translation, 10 of the men used that contrary word, nevertheless, or however, or but. Starting in verse 28, it says, but the people living there are powerful and their towns are large and fortified. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea and along the Jordan Valley. But Caleb tried to quiet the people as they stood before Moses. Let's go at once to take the land, he said. We can certainly conquer it. But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. We can't go up against them. They are stronger than we are. So they spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. They said, the land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers, and that's what they thought too. These men had gone through the land. They'd seen the bountiful resources. They had seen the produce of the land. They'd seen that it was a land flowing with milk and honey, just like God had said. But their eyes were on the obstacles. Someone has defined a committee as a group of people who individually can do nothing, who collectively decide that nothing can be done. Well, that's a pretty good description of these 10 men. Notice how the 10 spies identified the land of Canaan. They called it the land you sent us to explore. The land we traveled through and explored. They didn't refer to it as the land the Lord our God has promised to give us. They didn't refer to it as the land the Lord our God has given us. These men were not walking by faith. These men were walking by sight. These 10 men looked at the people of the land and they saw giants. These 10 men looked at the cities and they saw high walls and locked gates. Then they looked at themselves and they saw grasshoppers. But there's no indication that any of these 10 men looked at God and considered Him as part of the equation. Some have suggested that the spies simply imagined that there were giants in the land due to the fact that some of the city walls would have been up to 50 feet high, thinking that only a giant could build them, perhaps higher than that. Others have suggested that the spies intentionally exaggerated because they were afraid. But Joshua and Caleb did not dispute the claim regarding the giants, and the scriptures mention the giants in the land as well. In other places, for example, Deuteronomy 3 verse 11 says, King Og of Bashan was the last of the giant Rephites. His iron bed was more than 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. It can still be seen in the Ammonite city of Rabbah. And in 1 Samuel 17 verse 4, of course, we read about Goliath of Gath, a man who was over 9 feet tall. The problem was not that these 10 men were making things up. The real problem was that these 10 men were looking with the eyes of men instead of with the eyes of faith. Notice they said, we are not able. And as far as they were taking it, that was an accurate statement. But Caleb said, we are well able to overcome. And both he and Joshua claimed in a statement in chapter 14, verse 8, a little bit later, that if the Lord is pleased with us, He will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. We noted a moment ago that verse 32 said these 10 spies spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. They said, the land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people that we saw were huge like giants, and we were like grasshoppers in their sight. They spoke the truth along with some negativity sprinkled in with it, including having witnessed the Lord bringing the mighty nation of Egypt to its knees by miracles. These people had witnessed miracles of God daily for more than 2 years, yet they showed no faith in his ability to handle these problems. Just that morning, they would have gotten up and seen bread laying around on the ground. They had been seeing that and partaking of that for something like a year by this point. They saw the cloud hovering over the camp. They saw it become a pillar of fire each night. As it would move, they would pick up camp and go with it. Are these things not registering with these individuals? God expressed his view of this myopic, short-sighted bunch in the next chapter, chapter 14, verse 11, when he said, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me? And that's still God's attitude towards people when they refuse to believe and trust him in their lives today. When God presented these individuals with opportunities, they saw them as obstacles. On this occasion, the Israelites foolishly gave up their opportunity to inherit the promised land. This is where they chose the foolishness of men and the short-sightedness of men instead of the will and the power and the promises of God. But I'm going to take a moment to address what seems like a textual problem. But the purpose of doing this is not simply to try to unravel some alleged discrepancy. It's not to simply try to determine which way something happened. But there's a powerful lesson in this issue. The book of Deuteronomy follows the book of Numbers. We're in Numbers. Deuteronomy is next. Deuteronomy is the last of the five books the five books of Moses, which is commonly called the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and then Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy can be summarized as a book which reviews the law and the wilderness wanderings. To put it another way, it might be seen as a concise summary of Exodus chapters 20 through 40, and then the book of Numbers, along with some additional insights. In Numbers 13, verses 1 and 2, we read earlier, that's where we started, said, the Lord now said to Moses, don't forget that part right there. The Lord said to Moses, send out men to explore the land of Canaan, the land I'm giving to the Israelites. Send one leader from each of the 12 ancestral tribes. But when we read this account in the book of Deuteronomy, this is what it says. It's going to be a few verses before I get down to the parallel of that, but verse 19 beginning in Deuteronomy 1, Deuteronomy 1, 19 through 23. Moses says, then just as the Lord our God commanded us, we left Mount Sinai, traveled through the great terrifying wilderness, as you yourselves remember, and we headed toward the hill country of the Amorites. When we arrived at Kadesh Barnea, I said to you, you have now reached the hill country of the Amorites that the Lord our God is giving us. Look, he has placed the land in front of you. Go and occupy it as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has promised you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. But you all came to me and said, first let's send out scouts to explore the land for us. They will advise us on the best route to take and which towns we should enter. This seemed like a good idea to me, so I chose 12 scouts, one from each of your 12 tribes. Numbers 13:1 clearly seems to indicate that it was God's idea, or that God at least spoke up and told them to go send 12 spies into the land. But Deuteronomy 1:22 clearly states that the whole thing was originally the people's idea. So whose idea was it? Whose idea was it to send the spies into the land? I believe we see a principle here that we see in other places also. I think the people brought this up, and that seems to be clearly stated there in Deuteronomy, and then we just have God telling them what to do as it's recorded in the book of Numbers that we first read. God will let us have our way. not because he approves of it, but because we sometimes insist on having our way, and God lets consequences be our teacher. For example, in Numbers chapter 22, a man named Balak, king of Moab, sent messengers to a prophet named Balaam and offered him money to come and curse the children of Israel because they were camped nearby. That night, God talked with Balaam and told him in Numbers 22, verse 12, do not go with them. That's pretty plain right there. Do not go with them. You are not to curse these people, for they have been blessed. Also, Balaam tells him to go home. But not long after that, Balak, the king of Moab, sent more messengers back with more money. And in verse 19, Balaam told them to stay here one more night, and I will see if the Lord has anything else to say to me. Well, that's kind of puzzling. I mean, God has changed his mind from time to time, but it seems hardly that he would do that here, and he doesn't do that here. And if you recall how the account plays itself out, God is very displeased with how Balaam handles it, and there's an indication in the language of the text that seems to indicate that he got himself up the next morning and hurried even before the man came to him and said, let's go, let's go. But why did he see the need to reconsult God? It kind of makes me think that somebody says, well, I know God said you shall not murder, but this guy really deserves. I mean, I think I need to have a talk with God again and say, are you, you know, surely you can make an exception in this case. I believe God complied with the request to send spies into the land for the purpose of educating the people and letting them have their own foolish way and taste its bitter results. We see that numerous times throughout Scripture. God allowed this like he allowed them to choose a king. God sometimes allows things so we will see what a mess we make of things when we follow our own plans. It's like a child wanting to take a balloon outside and you tell them that if they turn loose of it, you go out there, it's going to slip out of your hands. You're going to turn loose it and you're never going to get it back. They keep on insisting that they want to take the balloon outside. Well, there's two ways you can handle it, at least two ways you can handle that. You can refuse to let them and appear to be the meanie, the spoil sport, the party pooper, the killjoy. Or you can choose to let them do what they want to do and suffer the consequences in a mild and harmless way. And when that does happen, the wise parent does not stand there and say, now I told you that would happen. You should have listened to me. Now you've lost your balloon. No, the wise parent says very little, or even is silent and lets the consequences be the teacher. Psalm 106 verses 13 through 15 speaks of Israel in the wilderness. It says, but they soon forgot what he had done and did not wait for his plan to unfold. In the desert they gave in to their craving, and in the wilderness they put God to the test. So he gave them, here it is, he gave them what they asked for, but sent a wasting disease among them. New Living Translation says he gave them what they asked for, but he sent a plague along with it. If you insist on pursuing a life of drugs or a life of alcohol or some other destructive behavior, God won't stop you. God will let you do that, but God also will not stop the destructive consequences of your behavior. If you insist on having it your way. Well, the Lord told Moses to tell the people that they would not be able to conquer the land after this, after they refused to enter, because he said, God will no longer help you. And he told him that the entire population of adults at that time would spend a total of 40 years wandering in the wilderness until every one of them died, except for Joshua and Caleb. That's when they changed their minds. They decided to take the land on their own, and they suffered the consequences of their stubbornness and their unbelief, their rebellion. Numbers 14, verses 39 through 45 records the futile attempt of the Israelites to invade the land of Canaan without God's help. says, when Moses reported this to all the Israelites, they mourned bitterly. Early the next morning, they set out for the highest point in the hill country, saying, now we're ready to go up to the land the Lord promised. Surely we have sinned. But Moses said, why are you disobeying the Lord's command? This will not succeed. Here's the parent saying, don't go outside with the balloon. Do not go up, because the Lord is not with you. You will be defeated by your enemies, for the Amalekites and the Canaanites will face you there, because you've turned away from the Lord. He will not be with you, and you will fall by the sword. Nevertheless, there it is. But, however, nevertheless, in their presumption, they went up toward the highest point in the hill country, though neither Moses nor the Ark of the Lord's Covenant moved from the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and attacked them and beat them down all the way to Hormah. We can learn a powerful lesson from that. As long as we follow the short-sightedness of men, as long as we follow our own short-sightedness, as long as we reject God and His ways, as long as we refuse to humble ourselves and submit to Him, we can expect to spend our lives wandering around in a spiritual wilderness, just like the Israelites. But we can change that. No one is without hope, because the scriptures tell us that with repentance and confession, forgiveness is available to everyone. But many of the consequences of the life choices we make are irreversible, just like the choice made by the Israelites at Kadesh Barnea. Joshua and Caleb were men of faith. They were men who did not worry about the size of a problem, because their trust, their faith, their confidence was in the size of their God. The real question in life is not, how big is my problem? The real question in life is not, how big am I? The real question in life is, how big is my God? Note the faithless response of the people to Joshua and Caleb's suggestion that they simply put their trust in God. In Numbers chapter 14, we read that when the people believed the bad report of the 10 spies, we read this rather, that verse 1, the whole community began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. Numbers 14, verse 2 now. Their voices rose in a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt, or even here in the wilderness, they complained. Why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? Then they plotted among themselves, let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down on the ground before the whole community of Israel. Two of the men who had explored the land, Joshua and Caleb, tore their clothing. They said to all the people of Israel, the land we have traveled through and explored is a wonderful land, and if the Lord is pleased with us, He will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It is a rich land flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. But the whole community began to talk about stoning Joshua and Caleb. We aren't called to throw things at people who suggest we have faith in God any more than they were. We're not called to run for cover when bad things happen. A mother came home from shopping to find five of her children sitting quietly, all five of her children, I should say, I guess. I don't know how many she had, but they were sitting quietly in a circle. When she looked inside the circle, she saw they had five young skunks they'd found outside. They lived out on a farm. Without thinking, she yelled, run, children, run! Well, they did. Each one of them grabbed a skunk and took off running away from whatever danger their mom must have seen somewhere. We're often like those five children. When faced with the obstacles of life, we sometimes panic and make a mess out of things. Unbelief always sees the obstacles. Faith sees the opportunities. And faith sees the omnipotent one, the all-powerful God behind it all. In his book called Fuzzy Memories, Jack Handy writes, "There used to be this bully who would demand my lunch money every day. Since I was smaller, I would give it to him. Then I decided to fight back. I went to sign up for karate lessons, but the karate lesson guy said I had to start paying him $15 a lesson, so I just went back to paying the bully." Too many people feel that it's easier to just pay the bully than it is to learn how to defeat him. What obstacles do you face in your life? Like Israel, too many Christians walk by sight and not by faith. Too many of us are full of doubt, and we focus on the problems and the obstacles in life, and we wander around restlessly blind to our own blessings. In doing this, we fail to receive the good things that God has promised us. We need to remember that this world is not our home. We're just passing through, and that we need to put our trust in God, that if we just follow His guidance, eventually everything will work out.